From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live.
This is the Malcolm Roberts Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome. We have a fabulous show lined up. Actually, we have two fabulous shows lined up with two remarkable Australian men. We're broadcasting live around the world right now. We're coming to you from Brisbane. We'll be coming to you from Boulder. And we'll be coming to you from the Gold Coast in Sunshine State. Thank you for having me as your guest in your car, your kitchen, your shed, or wherever you are right now. Maybe even your living room. This is TNTradio.live, today's News Talk Radio, and I'm Senator Malcolm Roberts from Brisbane. I have two very important themes for my programs. The first is freedom, specifically freedom versus control, the age-old battle that besets humanity and that frees us eventually when we overcome it. The second is personal responsibility and integrity. Both are fundamental for human progress and people's livelihoods. I want to acknowledge the people who organised a function last night at which I was invited to speak, and we were continuing 4 hours later. And I want to thank Mel, who organised it in Toowoomba, the fine people of Toowoomba who made it a sellout, despite trolls who tried to sabotage the event. So thank you so much to everyone who turned out. Thank you so much to Mel. And thank you to Mick Lindsay, a remarkable singer, who opened the show with a song from Johnny Farnham, I Am the Voice. And everyone felt and had a voice last night. I want to compliment and thank Albert Hackfort from the Hackfort Group, who own hotels and motels in Queensland. And we were specifically at the Burke and Wills pub last night. Well, it's actually a very, very fine hotel. It's a swanky hotel. I want to thank you, Albert, for supporting us with the venue and for giving my wife and I a room last night, because when we finished, it was close to midnight. We were actually having dinner at just after midnight. So thank you, everyone, for the topics that were really alive and engaging. I think I spoke for an hour and a half, and then it was 2.5 hours of answering questions. People are hungry for information. And I think that the most remarkable thing for me was that when I said that I'm fiercely pro-human, and I mean it, that got a rousing cheer. I also want to acknowledge someone called John McRae. A lot of people in Sydney will know of John. He's been the sparkling voice on 2SM, 2GB, 2UE, and I think other radio stations. But he's been a caller who's called in on Talkback Radio in Sydney, and he's really kept debate alive in this country. He introduced me to three books by Anthony Sutton: Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Yes, yes, Wall Street was involved in the Bolshevik Revolution. Wall Street and FDR. A remarkable man, John McRae. I think he's driving on the highway right now. So if you're listening, John, g'day, mate. Thank you so much for what you've done for the country and also for me. We're going to be talking about, going further west than Toowoomba today. Because if you go further west and you come to the town of Boulder, you'll be on what is soon to be the Outback Way. And for anybody who's young and traveling around exploring the country, or the grey nomads, it's coming to the end of your season right now, the weather warming up. Actually, it's not that warm, is it? So much for this global warming. But anyway, we've had really cold October and September. But the Outback Way will take people. Let me have a look at a map here. The Outback Way is being billed as Australia's longest shortcut. And that is a really sensible way of selling this highway. And the funding is getting approved for it. Most of it is now laid out. We're going to have a fine gentleman on, Rick Britton, later to talk about that. But it's also billed as the Great Australian Road Trip. And look, it officially starts, ultimately, the Great Australian Shortcut starts in Cairns, I think. Rick might correct me, and ends up in Perth. But the critical path is from Winton through the town of Middleton. We've got a little story about Middleton. And then Boulder, Tobermory, and then cross the border into the NT, Northern Territory, Tobermory, Engawala, Alice Springs, Earldunda in the south, coming down close to the South Australian border, Eulara, then Docker River, then Warrakerna, Warburton. Everyone knows of Warburton. And I can't pronounce that name, so I won't say it. Then Laverton. And we'll get Rick to talk more about that later. It is a remarkable journey to take. I've been on several parts of the highway, one with my mother-in-law and wife and father-in-law. We've had a remarkable week, the last couple of weeks, actually. I wasn't here for the show last 2 weeks ago because I was at the CPAC convention, and where a lot of people fortunately talked about climate and what a scam the climate change ruse is. I was due to speak at CPAC on unifying the conservatives, because I think that's what we need to do, regardless of party. My speech was prepared over 2 weeks. I prepared it personally, and I didn't mention a single party. But after listening to the drivel from so many prominent liberals on the Saturday, it became a liberal political action conference, not a conservative political action conference. Everyone of the liberals seemed to have forgotten about the fact that they're the ones who clamped down on freedom. So I couldn't resist it. I just had to put my prepared speech aside and talk about how the conservatives are losing their way because they're following the Liberal Party. And we can't afford for the conservatives to be hijacked by the liberals, because the liberals aren't conservatives. There are some fine liberal conservatives among them, but they're not getting they're not getting prominence in the Liberal Party. I put it like this. If I'm following you in your car and your car is belching blue smoke, then it's my duty to tell you that your car probably needs some attention to the engine because of oil, who knows, the pistons, rings, something's causing your oil leak. You thank me for that. You don't criticize me for that. Well, me raising the issues, wow, there was fallout, continued for a week. But that's good, because as one prominent American member at CPAC said, this is the way democracy is. It's not always pretty, but that's the way democracy is. And so thank you for the support. Thank you for Nigel Farage for pointing that out as well. This is what we need to do, have open debate, respectful debate, to bring the conservatives together. The conservatives are losing the battle because we're not speaking up, truthfully and honestly, and we need to do more of that. We had the remarkable news from the Pfizer executive at the EU under cross-examination from Representative Ruse. And the Pfizer executive admitted that, it's a really serious issue, that the Pfizer injections had not been tested for transmission to see whether or not they prevented transmission. But everyone was told, people were drawn from society on a so-called legal basis. People were told a cheap lie that it would stop transmission. Well, that was complete crap from the start. I remember asking four questions just before our COVID injections, the Pfizer injection, was rolled out in Australia. And my first question was, is it 100% safe? The immediate answer from the head of our Therapeutic Goods Administration, the chief medical officer, and the head of the Federal Department of Health was no, it's not 100% safe. Second question was, will it stop people getting the COVID virus? No, it won't. Will it stop transmission of the COVID virus? No, it won't. What dose do you recommend? We don't know. So when they didn't know the dose, that it wouldn't stop transmission, wouldn't stop contracting the virus, and it wasn't 100% safe. And now look at it. People tossed out of work, people, families split, divorces. We've had lockdowns. We've had a huge abuse. No legal basis for any of it. And this is what we now see. The lies are starting to come out. We've had talk about tax reform. We've had talk about Ukraine, actually a bit more than talk. It's starting to heat up there. When Maurice Payne, who was Senator Maurice Payne, first introduced Australia to the Ukrainian dispute, she condemned Russia. And every single person who followed her in that debate in Parliament, in the Senate last year, followed her earlier this year, followed her and said, yes, let's give support to the Ukrainians. I was the only one who dissented. And I said, let's just stop and ask some questions before we go headlong following the Americans into another war. I love the Americans. I'm married to an American. My son and my daughter are both dual citizens. My wife is a dual citizen. I've been in all 50 states of America. I understand its history. I respect its constitution. I detest its government. I love Americans. I love America. I literally love Americans. But their government has become hijacked and is disgusting. Then they overthrew Trump, stole the election. So there's a problem here that we need to look more closely at in the Ukraine. And I want to congratulate TNT, Mike Ryan, Jennifer Squires, the whole staff at TNT, Luke, who's on the board right now, the panel right now. You deal with climate, you tell the truth. You deal with COVID, you tell the truth. You deal with Ukraine, you tell the truth. You deal with governance in this country. You deal with the mouthpiece media, you tell the truth. So thank you so much to Mike and Jennifer and your funder who wishes to remain anonymous, but he's doing the job because we need to get our country back from the hands of the globalist predators who own the mouthpiece media and who own our senior politicians in this country. So right now, without any further introduction, I'm going to introduce Rick Britton. How are you, Rick?
All right, Malcolm, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. We'll have more about Rick in a minute. But before we do, I just want to introduce Rick. Rick is the mayor of the Boulia Shire. Now, Rick stood out as one of the delegates from the far western shires. They were in parliament and they're supporting the Outback Way. But we're going to talk more about other things, not just the Outback Way. But Rick Britton stood out. He's a plain speaker, straight shooter, no bullshit, no crap. It's just as it is. And he's got a wonderful, incisive way of talking. He's got a wonderful, incisive way of thinking. So, Rick, I'm going to ask you to talk at some stage today about the governance imbalance in this country, because the federal government has the dollars, the state governments have the power, and the local governments have the problems. And so I want you to talk more about that. But right now, Rick, I'm going to ask you to give you your own introduction, give us your life story. But before doing so, tell us something you appreciate, anything at all. Could be the weather, it could be Boulia, it could be your wife, who knows, whatever. What do you appreciate, mate?
Oh, mate, I appreciate the freedom that we have literally in Australia, really. And as far as where I am, I'm even more spoilt because of the isolation. We have that more freedom to do whatever we want to do and be whatever we want to be. And I suppose that's one of the things, being a farmer, as you could say, niche beef producer. Everyone around in the world, in Australia, you can be whatever you want to be. And I'm taking this off a skit that I've seen somewhere, off an ag ministry in America, that 90% or more of Australians can be whatever they want to be, and they don't have to worry about where their food comes from. They just pick it up on the way home from the shop, and there it is. It's so they're trusting in the other small percentage of doing the right thing and growing it professionally, and that's what we as ag industry do really well. I suppose being the mayor, I really appreciate working for my community where I am. We're in a isolated, and we're in a remote, but I wouldn't call us isolated anymore. We're still a remote area, but we're not isolated. Like, I can get up at daylight and be anywhere in Australia by dark. So, if you went back 40 years ago, that wouldn't be possible, but now it is possible. So I'm a fifth generation local of Boulia. Oh, well, I'll tell everyone, I'm nearly a local. I've got a great-great-grandmother buried on the dam bank at the Hamilton. My dad was born in Boulia. His mother was born in Boulia, so I'm nearly a local is what I tell everyone. I'm privileged to run a family business of my own in an arid landscape, and also being the mayor, and this is my fourth term as mayor. So those are the things, the little things that I appreciate, and they are really, to me, you saw little things, but they are the big things in life.
Well said. Wow, that's phenomenal. You said you're a long way from government, so you've got more freedom. More long way from Canberra and Brisbane, I guess you implied, where state and federal governments are headed, so headquartered. But you're a long way from government, so you've gotten more freedom. Because a lot of people would argue with you, Rick, right now that they haven't got freedom in Australia. It's no longer a country that's free because of the injection mandates and the restrictions and so on, and COVID, the bullshit restrictions. But you said it. You can do whatever you want to do, and Australians can be whatever they want to be. And you've lived that life. And it's been easier for you because you're a long way from government. So we'll get back to government in a little bit. Where were you born? And tell us about your early years and what formed you. What formed your attitude? Because I loved your attitude when we discussed in Canberra, and your just introduction confirmed that again. Where were you born? And tell us about your early days.
Well, due to, like I said, my grandmother was born in Boulia, my father born in Boulia, but because of then government, as you talk about governments, stopped funding types of things. I was born in in Southport, along with my two brothers, and my children all had to be born in the cities because of the lack of funding to keep the hospital. We used to have a hospital here, now we've only got a health centre. So those things that are, you know, that you think that state and federal should be funding and growing and bringing out to the region, they've actually been pulling them back and decentralising them. So I was, yeah, but I mean, born in Southport, I think Mum was down there for about, you know, 3 weeks and caught the train back to Winton, picked up from there and then spent the rest of my life in Booyah, other than when I left, other than through high school, I went to the, just over the road here, what I call just over the road, 360 Ks to the east into a state school in Winton. So I was pretty lucky. I had 3 years of correspondence, school of the air, and then 2 years in the Booyah State School and the other 3 years in the Winton State School. And then come home, went down south into Diamantina Shire, worked at Glen Island down in Inamika and Springvale.
So you worked at Inamika?
I'd worked at Inamika. I was there for 2 years. Yeah, 18 months, I think. I was down there.
So what were you doing? Were you working on properties?
Yeah, just in a stock camp. And that was great because, you know, back then, it was a lot of the stock camps were Aboriginals, and a lot of what you could learn from those people, you know, the lay of the land and get the feel of all that sort of stuff. And that's taken me into a good stead of sort of trying to read the country and understand the seasons and that and what's going on around you. So then spent, I suppose, from 17 to 21 or something and come home. And I've got to give a shout out to all the nurses and the governesses in Western Queensland, because there'd be a lot of bachelors around if they didn't have them. My wife was governessing. She went to Brunette Downs when she was about 16, and then up to Kilmulroy up in the Gulf. And then I met her when she was governess at Ellerslie, just outside of Winton. But in between all that, I suppose I had scoliosis when I was a kid, the flying doctor picked it up in here when I was about 7 or 8 years old, which is curvature of the spine. And from then I had a full body brace from when I was 8 to 18. And I suppose what really made me click when they diagnosed it, we went to the professionals in Brisbane. I overheard the conversation. The doctor said to Mum and Dad that they should send me down. I should go down. I'll be able to get me on a disability pension. And I said, no way in the world am I a disability. I've got, you know, I'm no different to my two brothers. So I bailed up and probably threw a tantrum, probably got a flogging for it. So because of that little tantrum, Mum and Dad never ever went anywhere near to try and get me on a disability. And I was treated no different to my brothers. We used to still ride horses, motorbikes, work. Yeah, nothing stopped me from doing that. I was actually probably encouraged more to get into those. So that sort of built that sort of attitude that, you know, just because I've got a deformed leg and all that sort of stuff, that wasn't going to pull me up from doing what I wanted to do. And the biggest picture is if I was a horse, they would have shot me. When I got to 29, I had a heart attack. And I don't know the ratios of surviving at that age. And so from that day on until now, it's been a bonus. So I've lived every day as if it's a bonus. I suppose that's what's built my character. But, you know, life gives you those things and you come out the other side. So take advantage of it. The reason why I run for mayor, my mum and dad have travelled around the world now. My brother and myself have, you know, we've done pretty well, and the Booyah Shire has been able to give that achievement to us. And so I suppose Anne, I was having a whinge about the council one day, and Anne said, well, why don't you just put up or shut up? So
I thought you married someone like yourself, didn't you?
they said that you should always marry the opposite. But so out of that, I was fortunate enough to get in on a by-election because two councillors retired, because I didn't know if I could handle that workload and also the workload at home. And I sort of thought, well, if you're a councillor, you know, you've got the whole community riding and depending on you to do the right thing by them. So you've got to put in 100%. So once I'd done that, I started getting phone calls asking if I'd run for mayor. And the following year, I ran for mayor and was able to get elected onto that. So I had no experience in local government or anything like that. And then this is my fourth term. I've had
Can we pull it up there, please, Rick? Sorry. Can we pull it up there, please? Because we've got to go to an ad break. But listeners will be back very soon for more with Rick Britton. And we're going to talk about what you did as a mayor and how you got into that. Rick, we'll continue without missing a beat in just a minute.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
I'm trying to fathom how influential this idea of postmodernism is, because I'm not a fan of it. I hate the idea that foundational reality no longer matters and our truth, my truth, dominates and everything is relative. And so everything is airy-fairy, you can float around and nothing is real. What is true from what I learned growing up? Because a lot of it is not true, and I've only been discovering this in recent years.
I'm listening to your ads and thinking about your question and thinking again about these different worlds that they're the majority of people would listen to your ads on this about Google, about manipulation and whatever, and just think it's all complete nonsense in the sense, not the ad itself, but just the idea that Google is out to manipulate you or whatever. Now that's a very surface level of reality. That's not hard for us to see the truth behind, because in this material reality that we all kind of accept as being the reality, you know, it is a reality. It's not made up. In other words, it's not fabricated, because you can see it. You can go and look at it and you can find it.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them, because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts, or be their next door neighbors, or endorse them for president like Joe Biden, then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. This is Senator Malcolm Roberts, and my special guest today is Rick Britton, the mayor of Boulia. Actually, I don't think he takes a lot of stock in being the mayor of Boulia. He's more a proud Australian who's willing and welcome serving his country. So, Rick, we've got a few things in common. I too have scoliosis. I too have been pretty independent. I've never seen scoliosis as a problem, really. It's hindered me in some ways, but for those who don't know what scoliosis is, it's a curvature of the spine, and there's a rotation of the spine as well, so one side becomes more pronounced than the other. At the age of 17, I was playing first grade football in a rugby union competition in Newcastle, so it didn't stop me. And like you, Rick, I learned so much. When I graduated from university, my father said, nah, you may know something now. So I decided I'd go and work at the coalface for 3 years, which is what you did. You worked at stock camps all over Western Queensland. So I commend you for that. And then you also have the same attitude I have. You, in your language, as you were telling us what you did in your shire, you were talking about serving the people. So many people at senior levels of businesses, in senior levels of politics, talk about how they have so many people reporting to them. What a lot of bullshit. It's their responsibility to the people. So they serve the people. And so thank you so much for that. Now tell us more about pick up where you left off about being a mayor.
Yeah, well, I suppose being mayor, and I thought, well, you know, how am I going to take this, you know, with no governance experience? So I suppose when I first got on council for those first 12 months, I went everywhere that the previous mayor went, whatever he went to, so I could learn and sort of got right into it and thought, well, you know, this is something that we really need to get into. And my perspective was that when I got elected on there, that, like, I got in with, I don't know, 60 or 70%. And my attitude was that the 60 or 70% that voted for me, they were already on my side. It was the other 30% that didn't, that I need to work on. So, you know, I sort of tried to, you know, in small communities like this, you know who they are and what sort of thing. That's the best thing about being in a small community, I suppose. So I thought, well, I'm just going to treat everyone equally, just do the best and bring in my business principles and just learn on about governance. So, and like I said, you know, I work for the people of Buya. You know, I've got no ambitions of going to get out. I've got everything that I want out of life. I've got a family, great kids. They've got family. So, you know, I don't need to achieve anything. I've achieved everything I want to achieve, and I just want to now give the people in Buya that attitude. And I think, and that's, you're right, you know, state and federal, you know, we are the servants to the people. And, you know, whenever they say, oh, we're going to fund this and we're going to give you this money, well, actually, it's our money. It's the taxpayers' money that are putting it up there. It's not your money to say, oh, well, here, we're going to spend this money. And, you know, that's where you get the big parties. Oh, we're going to spend this here and there. Well, it's actually not your money. You're actually putting it back into the communities where it actually come out from.
Yes. That's music to my ears. If you don't mind me asking, Rick, because I'll just tell the listeners, we've met before and then we met recently in Canberra when you were coming down to lobby for the Outback Way and put the Far West Shires out on the map in federal parliament, because the federal parliament, let's face it, hands out the cash. So I know what you're doing. I didn't know you had scoliosis. And I didn't know you about your background, but I could tell you had your feet on the ground. You're a man of the people, and you're a man of character who serves. So I could just tell, because there wasn't any bullshit about you. It was so refreshing. So how old are you?
Mate, I'm 59 on the big 6-0 next year. So yeah, just when I probably start to know, think I know everything, I'll probably start to get that age where I'm starting to forget it. You get to that.
I love the way you said you apply your practical business skills and learn about governance along the way. And you also talked about the Aboriginals that you obviously have a fondness for at the stock camps, and you learned so much from them. So you can learn from everyone. That's what I found too. I could learn from people who didn't have an education because they had an education in life. I could learn from people regardless of background, regardless of nationality, wherever I've been traveling, whether it's in China or Korea or Japan or India. I was born in India. And I learned that we could learn from every single person. Now, you have enormous respect for the Aboriginals. So tell us a bit about what's happening with the Aboriginal communities and how they contribute so much to the Shire of Buya.
Oh, well, they're like, as you know, Buya Shire Council itself is probably its second largest employee. You've got the ag business, so predominantly all beef in the Buya Shire. It's the largest employer. And then you've got the Shire, and you know, you touched on the Outback Highway. Well, that's council. We're doing that work ourselves. And now out of that, there's 28 councils. Like, we've got about 60 staff or 60 to 70 staff. On that on that network.
So your council's only got 60 to 70 staff
on there full time. Now, 19%, 19 of those are Aboriginals, and they're local, the Pitta Pitta. So 68% of our workforce are Aboriginals, and the majority of them are Pitta Pitta. So this is a traditional Pitta Pitta country. So, you know, they're actually working on their land and developing something that, you know, when this road gets sealed, it's going to be iconic, and that's something that they can hang their hat on, that they were part of that journey. So, and with the stock camp, there's just respect of them, you know, and they're a close-knit family type of person, and got a great understanding for horse sense. But they were pretty relaxed, and, like, you know, if you're pretty relaxed riding a horse, you can chew the back out on horses on their saddles on big days. So that's the only qualm we had with them, because they used to, well, as in the stock camp, you either get people who used to ride short or long, and they used to all ride long. So they'd flop around in the saddle and chew the back out of some of the horses. So, but other than that, like, great people to work with, you know, and bloody genuine people to work with when you're on a stock camp, and there's, you know, 10 or 12 years in the stock camp, and you're there working 6 or 8 weeks straight out in the middle of nowhere. So you learn to respect each other's skills and go from there.
Because you depend on each other's skills. So just for the sake of our listeners, a lot of listeners will be interested in travelling to Boulia, a lot of people, grey nomads, young people who want to explore the country. Tell us a bit about when you wake up, what do you see, how far out of town you are, out of Boulia, when you drive into the council meetings, drive into town, when you drive to various places. What does Boulia Shire look like? Give us a feel for the environment.
Oh, well, we're sort of, we've deemed, I don't know how we've come up with the catchphrase, but it's been here for a while. We're the capital of the Channel Country. So if you're in Brisbane and you head 1,780 kilometres west out towards Charleville, Longreach, Winton, and then keep coming 360 k's from Winton out to Boulia, you start getting into the Diamantina channels. People probably heard of the song, the Diamantina Drover. And then you get into the Hamilton channels, and then we're on the Burke and the Wills system right here at Boulia, and then west of Boulia is the Georgina. Now, all those rivers run into Lake Eyre from Longreach. Once you cross the Thompson, all those rivers west of Longreach all run into Lake Eyre. So when it's on here and they're full and Lake Eyre fills up, it's a, you know, I think there's few poets around of the vision splendid. And when I get up in the morning, we've got open Mitchell grass plains. This country has never been cleared. It's amazing when you get on the UHF and you hear the tourist coming out or the visitor, oh, you know, all this country was cleared. Well, no, this is natural Mitchell grass downs and in between the flooded channel country. So, and in that channel country also grows Mitchell grass. So you've got vast open landscape, treeless plains. So when you get up in the morning, you can watch that sun come up. You can see the sun break. And as it comes over, the sun rays just float across the Mitchell grass. You can see it hit the tops of the trees before it's on the ground. So, you know, you got from that rugged hill country around Middleton there, the Cornpore Hills, where old Lester at Middleton, you know, he said if John Wayne had known these hills were out here, he would have made all these movies out here. So we've got a bit of everything. And when people look at those hills, those flat-top hills, that's because this country was a massive inland seas. And those hills are flat because of the water that would have been waving back and forth as it dispersed out. That's why they're flat like that. So if you can vision just openness and great vastness, and you can just sit there and watch that sun come up, and it's just as spectacular when it's going down every afternoon into the west. So it's like I've been, like I said, more or less born and bred here. And it still takes my breath away when you see some of the sunsets and the sunrises.
That's beautifully put. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But is Lester the owner of the pub at Middleton?
Oh, his son is now, yeah. His son, Stoney. And it's amazing when you talk out in West here, people have got nicknames. I actually couldn't tell you his first name, but old Lester was, yeah, he owned the pub, and now his son, and all I know him as is Stoney. So he's now running it, his partner.
A couple of years ago, we were coming back from Birdsville races, and my son was with me in the car, and one of Pauline Hanson's staff, was, we gave him a lift back from Birdsville. Pauline and I were at Birdsville together, and we pulled into Middleton well into dark. It must have been about 7 or 8 o'clock, you know, and we walk in, and there are a couple of grey nomads at the bar, and a couple of locals at the bar, and this man, I think it was Lester, I'm pretty sure that was the name, but anyway, yep. We look up at the board, you know, and it had probably about 10, this is the menu for counter meals, and it had about 10 main meal choices up there, and there's some pretty exotic names, you know, of dishes up there, and I think, gee, this is pretty bloody good, and the people at the bar all said, get the stew, mate. It's really good. Get the stew. And I thought, gee, some of these other dishes I can't pass up for stew. Oh, what the hell? I'll take the local's word for it, you know. The only bloody thing he served was stew. It took us a while to work it out, but it was bloody good stew, I can tell you that. So that was Lester Middleton. And we came in. Many years ago, let's see, it would have been 30 years ago, we came in to Boulia from the west along the Plenty Highway. I could tell you a story about my mother-in-law there, but we're going to take a break soon. We'll keep going for another 5 minutes. But we came in on the Plenty Highway, and we arrived in Boulia late at night, and the pub was full, and I've never felt so welcome as we were felt there. And here's Christine's dad, you know, he's since died, but he was, you know, strong American accent, tall bloke, not immediately sociable, but a good bloke. And just every one of us felt immediately at home in the Boulia pub and had a few beers there. It was just a wonderful environment. Tell us about the Min Min Lights that Boulia's famous for, mate. And then after that, we'll talk about the Outback Way.
Yeah, well, I suppose the Min Min Light, it's something that we've got the Boulia Shire has built a Min Min Encounter Centre in there, and it's a number of stories with mannequins telling stories of this mysterious light that's been out here right back in through Aboriginal times. It's just as mysterious light. I think it's got something to do with the atmosphere. In the middle of winter here, you can be driving along, and because of the channel country and the higher ridges, your temperature can change from 8 degrees up to 14 within 20 kilometres. So in amongst that, there must be something that captures your light, but it's just a mysterious light. Even with the drovers, they tell stories of it. So it's just a mysterious light, and we've sort of tried to capture, or the Boulia Shire has tried to capture stories of those that have people have told those stories. Like you've got a shearer, a geologist, a lady sitting on the veranda telling her story, a couple of drovers, a road train driver, and they're telling them stories of what they see the light. So, and people come out here looking for it, but, you know, at the end of that story, it's you don't go looking for the Min Min light, it actually goes looking for you.
Yeah, and apparently it feels quite spooky because you can be driving along and next thing you've got a headlight following you alongside you, and That's pretty much what it's about, isn't it?
And that's where somehow, I don't know, because people can be driving along at 60 kilometres an hour, it just follows you, or either it's in front of you or behind you. You can go up to 100 kilometres an hour and it just stays the same distance away, and then all of a sudden it just disappears. So, you know, is it a reflection of your headlights caught in amongst those different temperatures in the mirages or what? It's an unexplained mystery. And while ever it's an unsolved mystery, it's something that the Boulia Shire can hang a hat on as a tourist destination to learn or to come out and try and seek and see that and get it explained to you.
Thank you for that. I gave you an opportunity to talk it up, and here you are, you told us the truth instead. That tells me something about
you. But you've got to come out to see it.
Yeah, come out and have a look at the specialty centre you've built. Now, before we go to the break, I'd like to give you plenty of room to talk about the Outback Way, because that was obviously a passion. That is obviously a passion of yours, Rick, and it'll do so much not just for Boulia, but it'll do so much for the whole bloody country. So a whole of Australia, not just the Western Queensland country, the whole of Australia. So tell us about how people can learn more about Boulia, and Boulia Shire, Boulia Council. Website, Facebook, directory information, who do they contact? How do they contact?
Yeah, well, I suppose we have a tourism centre in here, so if they just, you know, for those untrendies, get on the Google and just put in Boulia Shire Council, it'll come up. It'll, like, you go into there, it'll give you stories. We've got news stories. We have a little paper that comes out every 3 months, but we also have a monthly briefing of what, you know, what the councillors are up to and what we're trying to deliver for our people and projects that we've got on board. And I suppose just put in Boulia and you'll find it. It'll, you know, it's probably got a little blurb about what I get up to and what I try and do and my opinions of around. And what our councillors do. You know, we've got a very good, diverse lot of councillors at the moment. There's two or three from the land, one's electrician, and another lady is a long-term local in Boulia here that is really into social services. So we've got a good good voice of members across the Shire within our council, which is really good when we're wanting to know, well, what can we do to benefit everyone in Boulia and what projects? And the people in Boulia, they don't want, you know, we don't want yellow brick roads or stuff like that. We just want basic service, good roads, a good health system, a nice, tidy, clean town, and that's all we want, because life is so much simpler when you keep it simple.
So true. So let's take a break now, listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more from Rick Britton. And let's focus, Rick Britton, from now till the end of the show on the Outback Way, Australia's longest shortcut, the Great Australian Road Trip, and maybe seek your wisdom in closing on how to fix some of the challenges that the local governments face in Queensland. We'll be right back. This is Senator Malcolm Roberts with Rick Britton.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
The more I study the situation with underwater volcanic activity and its huge increase since the 1980s, the more I am wondering why this has not come front and center in the climate debate. I want you to think about this. Where is all that energy going from all these underwater volcanoes that are releasing untold amounts of heat into the ocean? Of course the oceans are going to warm up, and the way they're warming up is indicative that the underwater volcanoes are having something to do with this. Now, how is that not in the middle of the climate debate? The increase has occurred since the 1980s. In fact, a paper labels the increase as exponential since the 1980s. When has all this warming occurred? If the oceans warm, the air above it warms. And guess what? It releases more CO2 into the air. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Lowe, long jump gold medalist and world record holder. When I was 15, I was waiting to catch my train. In a split second, my life changed. As the train arrived, the crowd surged forward. I was too close to the platform edge, lost my balance, and fell into the path of the oncoming train. I was in a coma for 2 weeks, and it took 2 years to walk again. So please, stand back, look up, and stay rail safe.
A cashless society means zero cash. No tipping the waiter or hairdresser. No giving to busking musicians. No selling unwanted items for cash. No buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back. This is Senator Malcolm Roberts with my special guest, Rick Britton, the Mayor of Boulia Shire. Rick, tell us about the Outback Way. Am I correct in saying that it's the longest shortcut in Australia and that it ultimately goes from Cairns to Perth with a special focus on Winton to Laverton? Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's where when it and it's this year was its 25th birthday. So, you know, 25 years, it's not something that's just popped up on the screen. It's 25 years this year where mob local councils sort of had a National Road Congress got together and said, you know, let's build this road and get together. So they formed that the Outback Highway Development Group. And so it's sort of, oh, well, it's grown from there. Oh, yeah, I can't explain what it's done. You'll have to ask that question again, mate. I've got lost in my thought now.
So ultimately it goes from Cairns, Townsville to Perth, so from the East Coast. That's what makes it the longest, Australia's longest shortcut. But the real part you're talking about is from construction from Winton to Laverton, and you're using some new roads, some old roads.
Yeah, well, that's true, and that's where, you know, they started from Cairns to Perth, and then it was the local governments from Winton through to Laverton that really got on board with it. But it's connecting the eastern seaboard with the west and vice versa. And if you talk to Gavin Baskett, the mayor of Winton, the Outback Way starts in Winton. But if you talk to Patrick Hill in Laverton, it starts at Laverton in WA. So they'll have to sort that out one day. But it's gone from, you know, where it was just a billy goat track across the middle of Australia, and sort of, you know, when they first put it up there, it was probably just a pie in the sky type of project, and then there was kept lobbying and kept true to, like, it's bigger than just one local government area, and I think that's what's really stuck with it. It's gone through a number of prime ministers, local governments, mayors, it's gone through premiers, you know, main roads ministers right across Australia, and we've just kept on the one thing. And when it first got going and the first bit of funding was, all the councils put in of the projects of where the road fell apart at every time in every year, not just on special weather events. So where a road fell apart into bulldust, that's where the money was spent, you know, in 5 and 10 kilometre sections. So as that was done, the road become more trafficable. And so it's grown from there. And, you know, it's up now where we've got a big bucket of money from the previous government. We're waiting with a bated breath, and we, you know, that the new government is going to honour that, because it makes a hell of a difference to your tourism, your mining. The people that we've got on board now, big businesses, have actually looked at this road and said, you know, we've actually found some minerals out here in the middle of the territory, or WA, or outback Queensland, that we're just waiting for this road to be sealed. And once that road is sealed, it's economic viable to get that product out. So that's a big win for those mining, and it's also a big win for all the ag industries, and predominantly cattle right through there. And a lot of the mining is the green energy that the government of the day now is pushing. So a lot of that mineral is sitting out there, and we need a road corridor to deliver that. And then there's 37 local Aboriginal communities right across the route from Longreach, from Winton through to Laverton. Now, there's a better delivery of health service. They're going to get fresh fruit and veggies. So it's more of a prevented than trying to fix the health problems out there. It's a prevented problem. So delivery of service, and as, you know, the cost of freight now has gone through the roof. So you can imagine what it's gone done on those corrugated dirt roads where the trucks are, you know, are flogged out every trip. So there's a huge benefit for the economic of this nation and the livability. And to give you an idea of why people, you know, people say, oh, that's a lot of money. Well, there's 36,000 people live in the corridor from Winton to Laverton, and there's $5.2 billion worth of GDP. So there's a lot of money that is created in this arid country, and that is just the tip of the iceberg if the road gets sealed.
Gee, that's so well said. And I've got to give you some more figures. That, I mean, you gave me these when your team of councillors, mayors, gave us these figures. The benefits of the Outback Way, 10 to 19 hours saving in freight from the west coast to the east coast. 50% of Nullarbor traffic would go onto the Outback Way. It would open up mines. There are 700 tenements, mining tenements, along this Outback Way from Laverton to Winton, especially rare earths. You've just talked about, I don't call it green energy, but electric cars, batteries, and so on, very expensive. They'll always be very expensive. But for those who want them, the rare earths need to be mined, and that would open up access to the mines for the rare earths needed. It will also increase the fact that the mines will do the maintenance on their roads and the Outback Way. You mentioned that one large company would save $1 million a year in loss of cattle weight plus time plus road damage plus dust. So it's a benefit not only to the locals, but a benefit to the whole country, and it would open up. Now, on top of that, I've introduced to the Australian Parliament the concept of the iron boomerang, which would take iron ore involves a railway line across from central Queensland, Mackay area roughly, to the Pilbara in Western Australia. The rail line would take iron ore from the Pilbara to the east coast, where it would meet with steel mills put into blast furnaces, and the rail would then take back coking coal for making steel in the west coast, and we'd have a massive steel industry in the east coast and the west coast, and it would connect the whole of the central southern part of northern Australia with a rail line, with optic fiber, with water pipeline, and so all of those Aboriginal communities and other communities along the whole of the southern portion of northern Australia would be opened up and have access to better facilities, better services. And so we can see that with a little bit of forethought and involvement of the people in the Boulia Shire and the other shires in Western Queensland, Northern Territory and Western Australia, we could have a massive boost to infrastructure. And not only that, Rick, what we've envisaged and as part of the Iron Boomerang, or in addition to the Iron Boomerang, would be to connect the Port of Gladstone with the rail line, with the Transcontinental Rail Line, the Iron Boomerang line. So we'd have almost a national circuit of rail. So you would have Boulia and the whole of the Northern Territory, Western Australia and Western Queensland accessing a national rail circuit and a national road circuit once the Outback Way is completed. And what I love about what you're doing is that the councils haven't waited for the federal government to come good, the state governments to come good. You've come up with your own little plans on how you can upgrade parts of the road. You're very practical, upgrade parts of the road that are the worst off. And then once you knock off the worst bits, then you go to the next worst bits. And you're bit by bit, you're building it all. You're not waiting for the federal government and the state government. You want their help because it's a national benefit, but you're just getting on doing it. So full credit to you.
Yeah, well, I've always had, and I suppose it goes right back, is, you know, it's no good waiting for someone to help you. If you don't stand up and help yourself first, how do you expect someone to help you? So you've got to stand up and get stuck into it, and then you ask for assistance. And that's what that's all we've asked, is give us a fair go. And we've started the vision, and now they can see that vision now is going to be into a reality, and the economic benefit is right across it. Even where now it's got to a point where we, as local government in Boulia now, we really need to look at and say, well, righto, if, you know, we've got the money on the table now, it's going to give us, you know, X number of years before this road is sealed, we've got the money there. So our workforce, when that announcement made last year or this year, our workforce now have been guaranteed a job for the next 5 to 6 years. So that there themselves, when you want people to come out here and take on jobs, if you can give them that length of security of jobs, straight away they're going to take those jobs on. So straight away it lifted the community up. And what it also then is, well, oh, wait a minute, now what are we, when this road's sealed, you know, they're talking a 200% increase in traffic. Now, as of today, you know, we've probably got a small scale to traffic, but a 200% increase, all of a sudden we need more motels, we need more roadhouses, we need service people, hospitality people. So now we're at the process of now and building that plan to say, well, where do we vision ourselves, or where does Boulia want to be in 2030, 2040? And the reason we want to do that is because we want to make sure that our community is coming along with us. We don't want to jump it onto them. We want them to be part of that. And if your community owns your vision, they are then very much a part of it, and it's driven by the community. I think someone said, we're privileged out here that everyone that who's living in Booyah wants to is living here because they want to be. They're not forced to live here. They're living here because they want to be. And when you've got that, that creates great communities.
Well said, really well said. And what I'm loving about what you're saying is it reflects how you started. You started by going and working with the people to learn about your industry, and now you're doing the same with the whole community. Thank you so much, Rick Britton. We've got to end the show now. I'll be back with the next installment with a wonderful man called Leith Erickson, who take a completely different tack. But thank you, Rick, and anything we can do to help you with your outback way in the Shire of Booyah, let us know. And thank you so much for being on today,
mate. Thank you for the privilege. You have a great afternoon.